birth of a baby is a defining moment in a woman's life.
But what about the birth of a mother?
That's right, when a baby is born, so too is a mother.
This transition from woman to mother has a name. It's called matrescence.
This developmental stage is as powerful and irreversible as adolescence, and yet few women have ever heard of it.
So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Each episode, we will bring you honest and thought-provoking conversations, evidence-based research and knowledgeable guests in order to help you emerge a more powerful and aligned version of yourself.
So join us, your hosts, Kelly and Bree, as we attempt to make sense of our matrescence journey and to help you make sense of yours. All right. Good morning, Rachel, and thank you so much for joining us. I think that everyone who listens knows that I've very much been looking forward to this episode. We've been trying to organize it for quite a while, and I think there's kind of layers to dream guests, right? But you have been one of my dream guests for ages because I've really resonated with all of your musings on social media, on women's circles and motherhood and business and all of those good things. So it's been really hard to narrow down one topic to talk about today, but we've landed on mothers in business and how that all relates to matrescence, and we are so excited to hear your thoughts. So do you want to start by telling us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, who's in your family, and the work that you're doing in the motherhood space at the moment?
Thank you, Bree, and thanks, Kelly. I'm excited to be here. So I'm Rachel Rose. I would usually start by saying that I live in Wollongong on Darawal country, but in 2 weeks' time we are leaving after living here for 6 years, and we've bought a caravan and we're taking our two kids on the road, and we don't have an end date for that, so could be 6 months, could be 6 years, and we'll see how we go as a family in a tiny, tiny space. But I have two kids. I have a daughter who's 5 and a son who's almost 2. And I've been with my partner, Tristan, for a decade now. And, yeah, I run women's circles locally in Wollongong, but also run them online. I'm very mother-centric in my work, so they always have mothers, usually all mothers, because that's what I'm best known for. And so I do mothers circles and pregnancy circles and preconception work. And I am a doula. I have a background in doula work, but I don't attend births because of the ages of my kidlets. So I mainly support women in their pregnancy and postpartum phases of motherhood. And then on top of that, I am a business mentor for mothers, and typically am supporting women in the early motherhood phase, so children under 5 years. And I do the same work as a doula for business mentoring, in that I'm focused on the emotional and the spiritual and the practical realities of motherhood and how that relates to starting or growing a business. What it's like to be in the trenches of sleep deprivation while also having creative transformations through motherhood, and that tension of not really being able to fulfill all your dreams at once, but how can we work towards little pieces of that in the season that we're in.
I love that. And there's so much, and something I love about you is that there's so much pressure in business to really find your niche, right, and zero in on that and do nothing else. And I love that what you do is complex and varied, but it's kind of connected by this real love of community building and connecting women, and that's the common thread that runs between everything you do.
Yeah, mothers and community, that's my jam, and then I can do whatever I want around that.
Absolutely. Now, I think it's really easy to hear this and go, wow, she's living what I imagine for a lot of women is their dream. I know for me, the caravanning side of it, I'm like, oh, so jealous. I can't wait to watch your journey. But also a lot of women who are wanting to start their own doula business or small business or whatever that may be. So we'd love to start by hearing about the Rachel that you were before kids, who that person was, you know, whether this has kind of always been your trajectory, or if that kind of pivoted a little bit when you became a mum.
Yeah, sure. So I've always worked for women, with women, And my first job was in real estate, and I worked for 4 years for this amazing female CEO of that company. And she took me under her wing and really mentored me through that process. And then I went to uni and I did a Bachelor of Communications and came out the other side, and I worked in fundraising and community events and marketing. So it was like a charity challenge agency where people would sign up for these overseas adventures and raise money from their communities. So not completely similar to what I'm doing, but still a community edge. And the woman who ran that company was a single mum. She had a six-year-old at the time, and her daughter would come into the office all the time. And, you know, we'd stop work and look after Indy if she was in with us, and we'd play games with her. And I really got to see how you could blend motherhood and business. And this was a really successful company. We had 25 staff. And sometimes her daughter would have to come to meetings with us, and it would just be okay because that was how she was running her life and her business. And then I worked there for 4 years again. I loved working in places for 4 years, and then I kind of get the itch to go somewhere else. And I thought the do-over career for me would be to get into education. And I've always been really passionate about social justice and the ability for education to transform children's lives. I wouldn't have been where I was had I not had my education. I was the first in my family to finish high school, the first to go to university, the first to go overseas. And so I thought, I'll go be a teacher in social sciences, which is all about, you know, transforming the mind and expanding the mind to what the world's possibilities are. And I was really keen on that. I got a full scholarship. We moved to Wollongong so that I could start a master's. We like uprooted our life to do it. But I was not yet in the motherhood space before I was entering that. So I did a year of a really intense master's while still working in the previous job, commuting back to Sydney, doing five subjects. I was like, this is easy. I can do this. It's, you know, it's really hardcore, but I love it. I'm very busy. And then I became pregnant partway through that degree, and I got hyperemesis. And so overnight I had an inability to do anything that I was doing. I had to stop my work. I stopped commuting and was doing it from home for a little bit, and then eventually had to say to my boss, like, I physically cannot even look at a computer right now. All I'm doing is laying on the lounge, being nauseous and vomiting. And so, you know, she was supportive and let me go in that. And I had to put a pause on my uni studies because I was doing my first prac and having to run out of the classroom and vomit in a bin. It was very difficult. I had to admit to the whole staff room that I was only 6 weeks pregnant because someone opened a tuna can and I vomited, and I didn't want them to think I was like hungover on the job or something like that. And so my matrescence period really started from the moment I was pregnant, because everything in my life had to change from very early, just being debilitated with nausea. And I got through that pregnancy. I rounded out. I was able to finish the subjects that I was doing, but then I took a leave of absence and basically spent the last part of my pregnancy, you know, watching TV and sometimes not even being able to do that, just staring at the back of my eyelids because I was that nauseous through it all. And then when I had my baby, I was pretty much convinced that by the time she was 6 months old, I would feel really comfortable to just pop her into childcare and get back to my master's. And then 4 months came around and I was like, oh, she's still very little and this is all consuming of my world. And I was breastfeeding and I couldn't really comprehend how I could leave my breastfed baby and go back and do five subjects again. My uni was very strict and they were not mother supportive, really. And you had to do full-time study or nothing else in this particular degree. And I had to go through lots of administrative processes to counter that and say, no, that's not okay. There's no way I can go back on a full-time load. So eventually, after meetings with, like, you know, high ups in the uni, I was able to do a shortened load, but still found it really difficult to return to my studies. So I put childcare off as much as I could. And then my daughter was eventually looked after by my mother-in-law when she was 13 months old. And I went back to uni and I just had a totally different lens to my perspective of what a career in education was going to look like. I always had big, bold dreams that I would get into senior positions in schools. I'd love to have been a principal in a leadership role. And I'm looking around and I'm really only seeing lots of male principals in that role, assistant principals as women, but also thinking, like, how do you do this? Like, how do you just put your kids in full-time care and then go to school? And I had this perception that teachers, you know, did those short hours, but that's not true either. They work a lot longer than the school hours. They're at home with a lot of admin and marking and all of that kind of stuff. So I was also trying to do group uni assignments with people that did not have children, and I have to bring my daughter to the library and we'd be faffing about and I'd be like, do you not know that this is precious time? Like, I can't stay here for hours and muck about. And then I'd be doing in front of class presentations and I'd get a letdown and I'd feel my clothes start to stain with milk, and yeah, it just didn't match my reality anymore to be in that environment. So what happened next? I guess it was all thanks to Instagram, really. I was connecting with mothers on Instagram and following other women's journeys, and I had been through my own birth experience and postpartum experience where I did have a traumatic birth. My postpartum was semi-supported in that I had a doula. I had thought, as a first-time mum, to have both a birth doula and a postpartum doula. But the reality was that we were also living in a new area. We'd moved to Wollongong. We didn't know anyone. I didn't have family nearby. There is only so much a postpartum doula can do in a three-hour visit once a week for 6 weeks. And then after that, I was looking around and feeling desperately lonely and isolated, and it took a lot of my energy from sort of 11 weeks postpartum. Once I got the hang of breastfeeding, we had breastfeeding challenges. I found it difficult to go out and about in public. We were using nipple shields, and I, you know, had to go through a lot of stuff with the birth debriefing and the breastfeeding stuff. But I got to around 12 weeks postpartum and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I can't just be at home with a baby for 8, 10, 11 hours a day by myself. This makes no sense in my body. Where is everyone? And I had friends visit, and I had friends from Sydney come down, my old colleagues from my office, but they're in very different life stages. So they would stay for a little bit and leave, and I knew I needed mothers. But when you are recovering from birth and overwhelmed with the new tasks of being a mother, for me that was online to begin with. I had to just seek out community and seek out like-minded mothers online. And that's when I found Angela Gallo at the time, who was a doula at that stage. She's not doing that anymore. And she put up this thing about a doula training. And it just piqued my interest, and I was following lots of birth accounts, lots of breastfeeding accounts, just utterly obsessed with these kinds of topics. And it took me probably, when did I start that doula training? When my daughter was 18 months old. So I persisted with the uni, kept thinking I would be a teacher, kept thinking I'd be able to make it work. And then overnight I said to Tristan, I can't do it. Look at my shelf. I have 75 books on birth and breastfeeding and motherhood, And I don't want to read my books on education and, you know, I don't want to do my study anymore. There's a real mismatch here. What if I became a doula, which combines my love of feminism and human rights and centering women and children, but I'm just starting earlier than I thought. Rather than starting with children in high school, let's go back to birth, because what if we can support mothers and babies at that stage? What could happen in terms of their growth and their healing and their possibilities? And he just said, oh, gosh, that's what you're meant to do, Rach. Like, you're just meant to be a doula. This is what we're, you know, this is your life trajectory. And so I unenrolled from the uni degree and I started my doula training. And within a couple of months, I was hired by the doula training organization because I was that obsessed. And I started, I traveled around Australia. We went to Melbourne a couple of times and Perth, and I was helping to deliver the doula trainings alongside Angela. Not the content, because I was still learning, but the community side of things, the being that connector and being someone that was supporting the women through their own process of becoming a doula. Because it's, you think it's just like an academic rational study, but then when you start doula work, you understand it's really inside out work. You need to look at your own traumas and triggers and biases around birth and breastfeeding and unpack your own experiences. You can't go into doula work having not integrated your own birth experiences, including how you were born as a baby. So you do a lot of personal development, unraveling work. And I guess I was there to support women through that. And it felt very natural and normal for me. And it was like I was being a doula, just not at the births. It was at the rebirths of women through that process. And then, yeah, what are we now? Four years later, and still running a business that has sustained us in a little way. It has not been my full-time income. My partner's gone through a whole journey himself. He was the main income provider for the first 2 and a bit years of my daughter's life. And I kept saying, like, this can't be it for our family. You can't be working away from us 5 days a week and it feels really hard. This doesn't feel right for us. But it was a huge process for my partner to consider any other way. He worked in the medical industry. He had only known work. He had taken it on as his role to be the provider for our family. He earned a really good income, which was why I was able to kind of figure it out myself and try different things. And I remember, like, the first time he got a little bit of time off work, it was because I've been in a therapeutic relationship for the last 10 years. I've been doing psychotherapy and I didn't want my daughter in my sessions anymore. It had got to the stage where, fine, I could breastfeed her through the early stages. But as a toddler, I wasn't getting anything out of my therapy sessions, which were online. And I asked my partner, can you take an hour off work? Like, surely that can't be that hard. And it took 8 weeks of fighting with his work to get that approved and for him to mentally comprehend that, yes, that's important, and why shouldn't he be able to take an hour or an afternoon off to be with his daughter so I could go to therapy? And then from then it was like, can we increase this to half a day? What would that look like? And he was the first man in his medical practice to take part-time hours. And then it increased to 1 day a fortnight, and then it increased to 1 day a week. And then by the end of it, he was doing 2 days a week at that job and started to really create change where other dads were starting to do flexible work arrangements and starting to do that with each other, which was amazing. So, yes, when people see us now in that my partner is in partnership with me as a co-parent, in that he's with the kids 2 to 3 days a week, I'm with the kids 2 to 3 days a week, that was not an easy process that happened overnight. It took 2 years to really get to that place and for him to do a lot of work around what does it mean if I start to earn equal or have greater potential to earn more than him. Does that answer some of it? I feel like I've gone all around there.
There's a lot in there. We've got so much to talk about. It's an interesting point, just picking up on the last comment that you made about that transition. So some of our listeners will realise that I'm in full-time work and have been, apart from some short stints after my children. But what's really interesting is the amount of other men who sidle up gently to my husband when they work out he works part-time and say, "How did you do it?" Mm-hmm. And he says, "I just told them I was only available so many days per week." And they're like, but how? And he went, "No, that's it. I just said I can do 2, 3, 4 days a week." And it has changed. And he is currently 4 days a week, but there's been times when he's worked 1 day a week. And he said, "I just told them what I was available. And if they didn't want it, they could take it or leave it." And then he hears all the excuses about why people can't do it. Mm. And he'll often come home and say to me, "They've got a mental block. Like, they keep saying to me they can't do it." And look, there are valid financial concerns that families have. And I think what's really great is you talked about that transition over time. But I think that is something that we do need to discuss, is families have a reality. And I'm deeply passionate about teaching particularly women around financial independence, because the more we understand our financial independence and how what it actually takes for us to live our comfortable life, the more choices we have about how we spend our time and work. Mm. So that was, I think, just an interesting point you picked up. And what I'm curious to hear about is how that has changed the dynamic in your relationship, because the more he finds himself and what makes him happy, the more freedom you also have around that creativity to lean into your whole self, not just your role as mother and partner, I guess.
Yeah, I feel it's changed everything for us. And we have been so supportive of each other's passions over the last couple of years. And I think it started with me making that leap and becoming a doula, because I let go of a full paid scholarship. So I wasn't paying for my uni. And, you know, we'd uprooted our lives for this. And it's like, the permission to change our minds is really important. And then he saw how much I was enjoying what I was doing, not only in work, but just what I was learning and the opportunities that I was having. And he'd been a radiographer for 13 years and he was really good at it, excuse me, and earning over $100,000 a year. And that's really hard to let go of. However, it wasn't lighting his soul up anymore, and he loved the way it made him think, and he's very scientific, but he was really finding it difficult to only have 4 minutes per patient and just, you know, what that was doing to him, not being able to actually be with his patients and show them that he cared. And so in terms of our parenting dynamics too, we've been on this huge process of like me giving him more trust that I honour him as a dad and that he's going to find his own feet and his own way with our children, and it won't look exactly like I look after them or am with them or am present and play with them. He has his whole new language, and his relationship with our daughter is just so beautiful. And I don't think it could have been that beautiful if he was working so much. And really, it wasn't just the work, he was also mentally attached to the work. So he wasn't as present with us at home, even when he was not working. And then he, you know, a couple of years ago, I introduced him to breath work, form of like meditation practice, and he really loved it. And he wanted to jump ship and become a breathwork practitioner and do an 18-month course, which was completely left of center to his traditional upbringing. His father's a doctor, his mother's a teacher. Like, what do you mean you're going to leave this career that is so set in stone and do breath work? Like, what the fuck is breath work? You're going to go and breathe in a room and have psychedelic experiences and connect to consciousness. Like, what does that mean? But I was all for it because I'd had that experience of his trust in me and his support in me. So he did jump ship. It was actually in the quitting of his job. That was when his job allowed flexible hours. So he was going to just quit completely. And they said, look, you're so good at this. We so value you in this company. What if you did 2 days a week? And we ended up deciding as a family that 2 days a week while we were transitioning, while he was doing this whole new thing, while I was building my business, I didn't want the pressure of suddenly being the entire income earner while having young kids. So he stayed on for 2 days a week. Did 18 months worth of his breathwork facilitation course and is now doing that as well, which is, yeah, we never would have thought we would have been doing that. And I think it's these threads of, and, you know, he quit his job on the day we found out I was pregnant with my son, and that wasn't a planned pregnancy, and we very well could have said, no, let's, like, stop. This is too much. But we just knew that we were already on this forward trajectory. We just had to hold on for dear life. And it's only because of all of these different steps and him working part-time and him doing this new career, which he can do online, that's how we can do a caravanning trip around Australia now. Mm. Nothing that we were doing, if I had become a teacher and he stayed as a radiographer, mm-hmm. you can't go do that on the road. So, yeah, a big, big process. And, you know, at the beginning I was like, make sure you pack this in the lunchbox and have you got all of these things? And are you making sure that you've packed extra nappies? And, like, really couldn't let go of, I had been the full-time carer for 2.5 years and I know my daughter best and you're going to get it wrong. And him snapping at me like, come on, let it go, I'm going to be all right. And then him forgetting the nappies just as I had done sometimes and being like, okay, well, you don't do that again. Like, if you're at the park and you don't have a nappy, you've learnt your lesson. You don't do it again. You don't need someone nagging you about that. And so now, look, he's with the kids now. He's with the kids a couple of days a week. I literally don't think about the kids when they're together. I have no qualms about his ability to raise our children and to be with them. But that wasn't true when we first started. Mm. It was a lot of like, ooh.
So that sort of brings me back to the some of the work you do with women in business and the women's circles, because I am making some assumptions that many of the women who will join your circles will be struggling with some of these things that you have already been passing through. And I'm just curious in terms of, I'd love to hear a bit more about how those circles and how that work intersects, because one of the interesting things about Bree and myself is that we operate in parallel universes. So most of my life is spent wholly in the business domain, and most of Bree's life is spent wholly in the motherhood space. However, what I'm seeing more and more, which is really important, is a recognition and realization of we are not different people. We bring all of this whole self more and more as work is asking us to take off the mask.
Mm.
And sometimes businesses find that really confronting when on the one hand they say, we want you to come to work and be your whole self, but then they don't know how to deal with that. And I'm really curious to hear about the work you're doing with women in business and some of the themes and ideas you see coming through that.
Yeah, sure. So I am predominantly working with women who want to start their own business, and that motivation has come from a similar experience of mine in that they've had their baby and they go to consider returning to work and they realize it's just not set up for them in the way that they thought it would be. The childcare is not the easy fix that they thought it would be. Maybe they don't want to spend like whole days away from their children, but they're comfortable with short hour stints, like 4 hours at a time, that kind of thing. Maybe they had no idea that they would still be breastfeeding into toddlerhood and still be waking up through the night with their baby. And also when we think about the physiological normal brain changes that happen through matrescence, sometimes we might not feel as sharp in our brain, but our empathy has expanded and our capacity for emotional feeling states has. And so some of the work that these women might have been doing before, really analytical, really organizational, is just not something that they're interested in anymore. Or they've had huge like experiences through birth and postpartum, and it can be positive or negative. Women are motivated to change careers and work in the motherhood space because of traumatic experiences or hugely empowering experiences. And it's either they want to walk alongside women for both of those reasons. And yeah, they don't know how to fit into who they were before. They're not who they were before. And so they're wanting to recreate and refine themselves through that matrescence creative expansion. And they're like, I have no idea what to do because I've never run a business before. I've only ever been an employee. I've only ever been told when to show up, how to act, what to do. And so they're coming to me with the very basics, like, how do I start this thing and what does it look like? And I think what I do well is that, you know, you see a lot of online business mentors that will say things like, it took me 6 months or 12 months and suddenly I was earning six figures and, you know, all you have to do is follow these steps and you can do this too. And I'm deeply in the trenches of motherhood and know that, yes, that's possible for some women, and that will be circumstantial to many different reasons. Like, what was their base level of finances before? Did they have any pressure to earn, or were they able to be fully supported by a partner in that process? What is their social capital like? Who are they connected to? What other cultural overlayings do they have? Like, this, we don't create businesses in a vacuum. There are always advantages and disadvantages that we need to consider. For me, like, I've spoken publicly, but I always speak in my private containers about the fact that we were given an inheritance in our first couple of years of becoming parents, which meant that our mortgage was pretty much covered for a substantial amount of time. It is a hugely different place to begin a business when you feel financially supported in that way. So I don't lie about that, and I don't make out like I'm able to do this or better than anyone else, because I just pulled my bootstraps up and I worked really hard. With women coming to me, they're wanting to know, like, how do you do it? How do you do it when you've got toddlers at home, or you don't have any childcare, or you don't have any family support, or X, Y, and Z? So a lot of my work is actually just emotional reassurance that they're actually not doing anything wrong, that they're finding it challenging because it is challenging, that there's no secret formula that they're missing out on. It's actually that this stuff takes time, and we do it in the ways that we can in our own family units, and it's going to look different for everyone. So sometimes, like, I did a whole mothers and business round recently where there was one woman who had a 6-month-old, and she came to the end of the 3 months with us, and her big takeaway was that she was doing enough exactly as she was with her baby, mothering her baby intensely 24/7, and that she was just going to do little things like read books, listen to podcasts, plant the seeds, write in her journal about what could happen in the future. But if she wasn't able to start something while she also had a 6-month-old, no family support and no childcare, that wasn't a failure on her part in any way, shape or form. And then there will be other women who come to me and they're going through family transitions and they do need to be the breadwinner. And so we need to talk differently about, like, what that's going to look like and how we create a business when we have pressure on us around that. And, you know, that we probably need to get childcare. It's not going to be able to magically happen from just staying up after the kids are asleep. Like, you can't do this stuff without support. And usually that's just a big sigh of relief. Like, oh, okay, I just thought people magicked this out of their bums. Like, no, people have networks of support, or their house is falling apart because housework is not mothering or making a business. And so it's just giving people those reality checks and the compassion checks. It's a big part of what I do.
So big. I think that the two things that come to mind here are that often it feels like these two things are at odds, right? Having a business, there's so much hustle culture around that. And if you work hard enough, it'll pay off and you'll get rich really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then as mothers who want to mother responsively and maybe breastfeed and, you know, maybe not sleep train, wake to their baby overnight and mm-hmm. be the primary caregiver, it's like, how do you mesh those two things? Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people in business capitalize on that and they profess to have the secret, right? So we're out here going, how does this work? We've been told we can have it all, but how? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we've got the secret for you. But I actually don't think there is a secret. And I think that that is something you do really well. It's just like cutting through the bullshit and being honest about what might be realistic in this season. And mm-hmm. it's really shaped, I think, how I know I, especially maybe Kel too, show up with the podcast of when we were growing it, I was finding myself feeling like I needed to be professional and have it all together. And through following you, I started just being honest with people, and I'd email guests and say, you know, I'm sorry, I haven't booked you in yet. My kid is sick and we have no childcare and I just haven't had time for it. And there was always this like sigh of relief of like, oh, I'm so glad that you haven't scheduled it because it's not a good time for me either. This is what's going on for me. And it was like once I could let myself be vulnerable and honest and imperfect, they felt that they could too. And it's just been a really beautiful experience, right, to go, hey, I don't have it all together. We're not even close, but we're both individually showing up and doing our best, and that is good enough in this season. So something that I would really love to hear is, what are the main challenges that you hear mums facing in this season in terms of integrating parenting and business?
One thing is the expectation that it'll make money straight away, and that potentially there's pressure from a partner that, hey, I'll support you to this degree, but also this needs to make money for this to make sense. When building a business is a long-term game, it takes time. Whenever I'm thinking about my business, I'm thinking in terms of 5 and 10 years down the track. The first year I had my business, I made $4,000 and I thought that was excellent. And, you know, projecting this year, it'll be around 60,000, next year, probably more than that. But, you know, that's not going to be everyone's case as well. Some people will take 5 years of earning just, you know, thousands of dollars and building it. It takes time to grow it. So giving up before they see what it actually could be is one of them. Sleep deprivation is huge. It is really hard to grow a business when you are chronically sleep deprived. And I'm speaking from experience. It is, you can't be on all the time. There are days where I go to sit in front of my computer and I feel like I can't even read any words on the screen. Or the thing with me, and if anyone's listening, just work in the motherhood space, because you can do what Bree's saying and be honest about that. So even when I am showing up and doing mothers and business, if I haven't had any sleep the night before, I'll admit it first up in the call, just so we get that out of the way. And I'll say I'll show up in the best ability that I have today, but also I woke up 16 times last night, so this is where I'm at. And then that's a little permission slip for everyone else to admit that, oh, yeah, okay, I'm showing up as I am today as well. But yeah, the sleep deprivation piece is huge. What I find to be true for myself and other women is there is a lot of repetition in early motherhood, whether you are breastfeeding or not. You still spend a lot of time doing repetitive movements, rocking a baby, sitting in a chair, nap trapped, laying next to them. And that can create, it's almost like this inbuilt meditative practice that mothers have. We don't need to go out and seek all of these spiritual experiences. They're inbuilt into the rite of passage of motherhood. So if you allow it, and if you don't spend all of that time on your phone, which I do a lot of the time as well.
Same.
But if you can put the phone down and be in the present moment, rocking the baby, breastfeeding the baby, laying next to the baby, you'll just find your mind wander and you can enter into almost altered states of consciousness. And it is there where creative ideas are born. Like it is there, it's when you're walking the dog or you're in the shower or you're having a poop on the toilet where you get those sparks of creativity. And in early motherhood, that is the potential all throughout the day, at many moments throughout the day. So what I find is that mothers have all of these ideas. They are so inspired. It's flowing. They just can't contain the ideas. And the problem is they don't have the match reality that they can execute all of those ideas. And sometimes that means just doing nothing. Sometimes it means feeling really overwhelmed. And sometimes it means just doing one thing, choosing the one thing, and doing that to the best of your ability. And so depending on the person, depending on the personality, that's the way I'll encourage them to move.
I'm so curious about your experience with how matrescence unlocks that creativity, because, you know, I personally think there's just not enough research about how matrescence affects women and how that unlocks. But what you said there about we have this creative energy that overflows, but the inability to execute on it is so resonant with me, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. What you said is so relevant to this, because I've been having these conversations with my husband and with Cal for the last year of, we've created this podcast, we've grown a social media following. The next thing that follows is you need to build this into a business. Mm. And I'm like, when? And with what resources? Because cognitively, I do not have the ability. I have so many ideas, but to sit down and get them out of my brain onto paper in some kind of logical flow, I absolutely cannot do. And it's been part of why I've decided to go work in a restaurant, because I'm like, that is my capacity right now. And kind of opposite to what you were saying, where for some women it might be easier to start your own business and have that flexibility in the time flow, I'm like, at the moment, that is my capacity to show up and do work that is not super meaningful, doesn't require a lot of me mentally, just going through the motions. And my hope is that for me and for a lot of other women, those ideas that you have in early motherhood, as time goes on, you will have the resources to action them. But I think that that time frame is really not what we expect it to be.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to so get on my high horse about this. So there's a couple of things I want to point out here. You are running a business.
Yes, the fact that there is the same thing.
We say the same thing. Just because right now it doesn't have a consistent income, it doesn't mean it's not a business. You have created a thing, an entity. It has life. It has a construct. It has customers who, if you don't show up, they worry about you and go, where are you? Is everything okay? So that's one thing. The other thing is, you said that you're doing work that's not meaningful. Those people who you serve with a smile in a restaurant, it's meaningful. Have you ever been to a restaurant where they give shitty service?
Yeah.
Right? That can ruin your day, that stuff. So you
I know, it's right, but it's that breaking down of our beliefs around what we should be able to do. I feel like as a mum of two, you know, my kids now 4 and 1, I should be able to start a business, run it successfully, parent my kids responsibly. Like my children still, I was up with Taj last night from 2 a.m. till 4:30 and I'm still breastfeeding and we have no formal childcare. And so it's like, I feel like I'm the only one who can't do it all, but I know that there's so many of us who feel that way, but we're not seeing that conversation so much on social media. So we put it down to individual failure, not, you know, maybe we're not supported enough, or maybe it's actually just incompatible in this phase. So,
I equally will suggest women to get part-time jobs like what you've just described when they're building a business as well, because that takes the pressure off everything that you do to be the thing that is, you know, the moneymaker or whatever. So if that's working for your family, that is wonderful, Bree. And, yeah, Kelly got to it first, but you are building a business. This is a business. You don't need to monetize it tomorrow, but when you can and will, it is going to support you. And, you know, it is successful. It is a successful entity. Look at the messages that you get from women that say that this podcast has impacted or changed their life. Like, that is so powerful and positive. And a business is not measured completely by financial success. That is the old capitalist model. That's not what we're wanting to recreate here. When I was working in fundraising, we did a B Corp certification, which is where you actually get your business certified for other things other than just the monetary exchange. It's like, what good are you doing in the world? So you are starting a really positive business from scratch when you have two little kids, and why the fuck should you be able to do it when you don't have any childcare? Or when we're doing motherhood studies together with Sophie Brock, and I think in the next 5 months you're really going to solidify that you're doing amazing despite modern day motherhood.
Mm. Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah, this is like we're getting to the crux of the conversation here, because there's so many things on this. A, you're running a business, you're adding value to the world. That value flow will flow to you in different ways. How do we judge what is meaningful and what value, and what are the measures we have other than finances? And then on the other side, what if you weren't? What if you were just other? What is the value society has on that? What's the, you know, we don't measure that in economic terms. Mm. And that's where I'm, you know, there's still so much research to be done. And so there's all these layers. There's layers of women that you're engaging with in your community through the podcast who are looking at you and saying, I'm not doing enough because I'm just a mum. And there's a part of us, like you say, Rachel, where sometimes it's going, what you need to get to grips with is that is enough for you in this season. And that doesn't mean you will never do anything again. And I think we get into these like ruts and funks about, you know, but it is about just, I am not the same person today as I will be tomorrow or as I was yesterday. And some of our mindset work and that comes with that, because it's complicated. Everybody has context and situation, and helping women to go, where am I right now and where do I want to be and how do I actually just take even the teeniest, tiniest step towards that is some of that important work that I see both of you doing. I just sometimes think you forget how you can't see that impact and the ripples on the pond, Brie.
Yeah. And while I'm going to get Kel to pull up a tweet because we want to read that to Rachel before our time is up, but I think that this podcast over the last year and the Instagram page have really been an anchor for me. After I had Taj, I feel like I definitely experienced postnatal depression and anxiety. Whether it wasn't formally diagnosed, but that was what felt true for me. Mm. And having this community and having something that was just for me and some scheduled time to do this, I feel like that's what's kept me above water, kept me afloat throughout this second postpartum experience. And it's like, okay, but well, what money are you earning? Like, that's the question. I'm like, okay, this has added so much value to me. And they're like, but are you earning an income from it yet? Like, have you monetized it? I'm like, okay, we're just going to overlook this whole thing.
Well, I can tell you, if you want to start getting into economic value, have a look at how venture capital works. They do not, there are businesses that lose millions of dollars and are valued at very high valuations in the market because of potential. So if you want to start putting a venture capitalist view on it, your market capitalization is very large. You have not yet monetize that into an economic stream, and that's confronting for you, because we have all these overlays about what are we worth, how can I charge. I can tell you there's people sitting there going, I actually don't know how to contribute economically because there is value in what you deliver, but we haven't yet created those streams for you. And I have often said on the podcast, for me this is a hobby. For you, it's a career, and we're trying to help shape that. And what I mean by that is my hobby is lifting women up. I just happen to use this as one of the channels that I do that through. I have other channels. You know, I'm lucky enough now to sit on a board that's around women in technology. I have women that I provide career conversations with. So that these are multiple channels. We now have to help you take some of those steps into other channels around how to realize the value that exists within your business.
Yeah, which is another conversation, right? That transition from this is a hobby to this is a business that I want to earn an income from is huge.
But Brie, I'll just say, in my second postpartum with Dion, I took everything off. Like I stopped working with clients, and it was one of the most impactful 6 months of my business because I had shared my birth story with Dion, and I'd gone on Australian Birth Stories, and you know, 10,000 women had listened to that podcast, and I was getting messages of just like, you've changed the trajectory of my life. I've just booked in a home birth. I've just had my home birth. I was getting all of these photos of women like birthing their babies on the toilet because they'd resonated with my toilet birth. And I wasn't earning a single dollar in that 6 months. There was no economic exchange there. And then I also think, you know, I'm about to release this Women's Circle Facilitator training course. Whenever I can get over crying at the camera as I'm recording it, because I'm finding it so challenging and confronting. But I do know in my heart of hearts that I'm probably going to get 100 women sign up to that, and it'll be quite easy to do. And it's only easy now because I've spent 4 years contributing to this community and sharing freely and being and showing up in who I am. And like, that is you. And, you know, I think Kelly and I just see, like, when you choose and have the time and space to do this, it's going to be bonkers, because people just can't wait to support you and give back to what you've given to them.
Oh, thank you. It was actually on our first call with Dr. Sophie Brock the other day where someone mentioned the build it and they will come. And I was like, I feel like we've done it opposite. Like, people have come and now I'm like, should I build something? Just strange. But I, you know, I would have told you prior to having kids that I was really ambitious and driven. And now I'm like, am I though? Or was that just who I felt I needed to be? I don't feel like I am. I'm like, I'm quite comfortable just having slow days and slow mornings and, you know, working in a restaurant. And maybe that will ramp up soon. But at the moment, I'm still, as you said, very much in that phase of surrendering, and I know that that will amount to something, or it will amount to nothing and I won't regret it anyway. I like what we're doing right now, and if it never becomes a business, if it never earns money, I would have zero regrets about doing it. And I'm super lucky to be in a privileged position, as Kel is, where we have the financial means to carve out this time for something that could just be a hobby and really fulfill needs outside of the financial. But before, I know you're almost out of time, so before we jumped on this morning, Kel pulled up a tweet and said, have you seen this? And read it to me, and it relates to mothers in business and how we're valued and not valued in our mothering role. And I was like, let's read it out on air and collectively get angry about it.
I feel like this might be like a mic drop moment. And this is one of those things where the intersect. So this was actually posted through Twitter and LinkedIn, which is part of that other part of my life in business. So there was an entrepreneur who tweeted, over the past 10 years, I've earned a PhD and got promoted to CEO while having 6 kids. The secret to keeping it all under control, one small habit. It's not sexy, but it's essential. Here's the breakdown for you. And he quotes, committing to a weekly review, checking all his inboxes, checking all the to-dos, reflecting on my week, reviewing the calendar, planning next week. And he credits a number of tools such as Evernote, Things, Roam, so Trello tools. So what has happened is there's been a significant backlash, as you can imagine, about this tweet. And there was some commentary around who was looking after the kids. Who got the kids ready for school? Who cleans the house? Who does the laundry? Who goes to the supermarket, manages the appointment, picks up the kids, cooks dinner, maybe looks after things? Where is your wife in this, and who's looking after all these? What it really left was a vacuum of all of those jobs are important and valuable, and none of them were referenced. Now, as an individual, he has since apologized for downplaying his wife's support, and he is lucky enough to have a wife who's still with him, by the way. But as you can imagine, this really touched a nerve. And I think it's really important because there's so much to dig into around that. And I guess with the women's circles that we talk about, I mean, ultimately, we have all had the experience of hearing a man say, I don't know what she does all day. You know, we've also had the experience of saying, you know, look what I've done, and you know, rolling out the perfect family to dinner. So I think what's super interesting is that even today in 2022, that there is that bias, and he genuinely didn't mean it, but that is what is at play. What I really enjoy is actually the fact that society is now calling us on this, and I don't want to double down on the anger here, but we woke up this morning to hear that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, and I'm just just appalled. And and Bree quoted another one of our podcast guests this morning, which I think is really relevant, is whilst this is not happening in Australia currently, the behaviour we walk past is the behaviour we allow. And I think there's so many, we take so many steps forward and there's so much work to do on this. So I thought that was super interesting that this is a conversation that's playing out in business, and business and politics are becoming incredibly intertwined.
And I think it may feel a little bit irrelevant, but it's not at all, because these are the circumstances under which we are trying to create a business, right? In a world where your reproductive rights are being threatened, where your work at home is not being valued, you know, to just say, well, just work harder, hustle harder, is not the solution. And I think that that is what you do so brilliantly. So you are more than welcome to give us your final thoughts, but I know that you're short on time. So before that, I just want to say thank you so much for carving out this time for us.
Oh, thank you. I actually have a few stats that I wanted to read, and it was that 76% of unpaid childcare is done by women. 69% of unpaid care of adults is also done by women, and 67% of unpaid domestic work is done by women. So we do the lion's share of care work, domestic work, work sometimes, and we don't get the credit and the recognition. And, you know, we've got a new Prime Minister at the moment, Anthony Albanese, and there was all of this stuff about he was raised by a single mother, and I think we need to think about that. He was raised by a single mother and now he's the Prime Minister of Australia. Mothers are fucking incredible and we deserve more credit. And, you know, when my partner was going through the ranks of his work, I was always very clear that this is in part because I am at home with our daughter and you need to pay my superannuation that I'm not getting at this time. And we did that. We've done that as a family, that I get the super that I didn't get while I was looking after our daughter. And we need to have these conversations in our households and then also rage in public spaces because, like Annabelle Crabb says, everyone needs a wife.
Oh, I love the book, The Wife Drought. It was, oh, my goodness, that was mind-blowing for me. And to end on a bit of a funny note, because I think those statistics are very important, and for someone who, like me, who I'm in my mid-40s, we are sandwiched between having children who are dependent on us and ageing parents, and you really pulled out care of ageing parents there, and I think that's a huge thing. And sometimes I make up statistics to help me, and I remember one day when I was doing the dishes raging, which I do a lot, and because I like the clean sink, and I know my husband hates to do it, and he came out one day and he said, "Why are you so angry?" And I said, "Did you know that 76% of women think about divorce while doing the dishes?" And he was like, "Do you think about it a lot at other times too?" And I was like, "Mostly when I'm doing the dishes." So then the next time I came home and he'd done the dishes, and I thought, "Oh, that's so funny. I'm going to use that tactic again." So he was like, "I did the dishes because I thought I just didn't need you thinking about divorce today."
You might be into, what is it called, Swedish rage cleaning or Swedish death cleaning? It's a legit thing. So. And I think that mums are constantly told, like, you need to be calmer. You need to meditate more. I'm like, I think we need more rage. So
yes, there were screaming circles that popped up during the pandemic where mums are meeting in car parks and just screaming into the distance. And I've done that in women's circles here, actually. It's very cathartic.
Oh, I love that. It's not even a formal thing, right? You just notice one person screaming and you just walk up.
Oh, we need a whole other episode on the good girls. I had a situation at work 2 weeks ago because all of my executive team are men and they were on at me about something useless. And I said, "Would you all just back the fuck off?" To me. And I went, we're like an 8-year-old football team chasing the same ball. This is my job. If you ask me one more time about that, I swear I'm going to lose my shit. And they were like, "Oh, okay, she spoke. She got angry."
Oh, we so need to normalise women feeling angry. Thank you so much again. We are so grateful.
Thanks for having me.
Amazing day.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for today's conversation. If you want to hear more like this, don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you'd like to know more about anything we talked about or you heard on the podcast today, check out our website, www.birthofamother.com.au. You can find us on Instagram at matrescence.podcast or send us an email to info@birthofamother.com.au.
If you think others could benefit from this podcast, take a screenshot of you listening to this episode to post on your social media and tag us. Alternatively, consider leaving a review with your favourite things about the Matrescence podcast. This really helps us to increase our visibility and ensure we are reaching as many women as possible. As always, thank you for spending your time with us. We hope you will tune in next time.